Caddy's World, written by Hilary McKay and read by Sophie Aldred.
Chapter 1. Charmed Circle. These were the four girls who were best friends. Alison hates everyone. Ruby is clever. Beth, perfect. Caddy, the bravest of the brave. "Mostly because of spiders," said Caddy. Alison, Ruby, Beth and Caddy had started school together aged 4 and 5, plonked down at the four corners of a blue top table in primary one. "You four will be friends," the teacher had told them, pronouncing the words like a charm. She was an elderly person, tall with silver-streaked hair twirled and looped about her head, black beads, and, remembered Caddy years afterwards, a sort of purple haze about her that may or may not have been a cardigan. She was probably a witch. "You four will be friends," she said again, and her glance included all of them. Alison, who was sulking, Ruby with her thumb perilously close to her mouth and her hair cut short like a boy's, and Beth, who was not only perfect, but also dressed utterly and completely in brand new clothes, snow white underneath, school uniform on top. Last of all, Caddy, who had arrived very late because her mother had forgotten the date. The teacher smiled down from her looped and beaded heights at the table of little girls. Charmed, they smiled back up into the ancient purple haze. Alison, Ruby, Beth, and Caddy. Bewitched. They stayed that way, all through primary school and into secondary school. At 12 years old, they were still good friends. "Best friends," said Caddy. Alison lived next door to Caddy in an immaculate house. No visiting went on between the families. Alison's mother used to look out of the window at Caddy's mother and shake her head and say, "I'm not getting involved." "Absolutely not," Alison's father would agree. They were both estate agents. Sometimes Alison's father would gaze at the state of the Cassin's roof and murmur, "I hope we never have that property on our books. You'd have to be honest." Their daughter was honest, naturally. Alison's was a lovely but insulting honesty that conceded to no one. Her bedroom window faced Caddy's, but usually she kept the curtains closed. "I like my private life," she told Caddy. All the same, she was a helpful friend. When Caddy showed signs of oversleeping on school days, she had several times flung slippers and hard-nosed teddy bears at her window and screeched, "Get up!"
"You could work out a much better system than that," said Ruby. "You'd only need two pulleys if you could fix a pendulum to the lamppost in between. It's out of line, but it wouldn't matter if you hung weights or something to take up the slack."
Ruby, now 12 years old and still sucking her thumb, was brainier than ever. Ruby, small, red-headed and quiet, owned a hammer and a Swiss Army knife, loved books and maps and numbers and patterns and words from other languages. She was good at mending things too. Ruby knew how to fix charms on bracelets, chains on bicycles, and frozen computer screens with petrified mice. She was an only child. Both her parents were dead, killed in an accident when she was a very small baby. Then an amazing and unusual thing had happened. Her four grandparents, all retired or elderly, all astonishingly intelligent, had pooled their not very large savings and bought a house. And into it they had moved with Ruby, all four of them. So Ruby was brought up with not much money, but with lots of books, nursery rhymes in 5 different languages, kitchen chemistry, seaside expeditions to observe the effect of the moon on the tides, and a large floppy cat, bought in order to stop her feeling too much of an only child. Really, though, it was her friends who did that. They shared with her and teased her, and at school they stopped her ever having to do a thing by herself. That was very useful to Ruby, because as well as being brainier than ever, she was also shyer than ever. Perfectly happy, though, until the day of her last school report.